Are you ready?
Go.
Let's go.
Now circling in the neutral zone. Here's the pitch on the way. 36 yards for the win.
This.
Here comes a big chance. The shot
is
this the dagger?
The neutral zone.
Oh, score! Oh, my God!
This is as good as it gets.
The neutral zone is brought to you by the Ontario Para Network. Follow them online at onpara.ca.
Now, here's your host, two-time Paralympian, Brock Richardson.
What's going on? It's time for another edition of The Neutral Zone. I am indeed your host, Brock Richardson. Coming up on today's show, we are joined by the executive director of OnPara, Doug Hannum. We're going to talk all things from that organization, who also happens to be our sponsor. So we got to say really nice things about them. And we're also going to talk about dedication when it comes to para athletes and coaches. We will also talk a little bit about the Brier, which is now sponsored by Montana's. I'm joined by Josh Watson and Claire Buchanan. Here come your headlines.
Neutral Zone headlines.
Ontario Para Network, Tennis Ontario, and Tennis Canada will be hosting a wheelchair tennis instructor course on April 28th at Sobeys Stadium in Toronto. Any tennis instructors interested in adding or improving their wheelchair tennis coaching can find registration information for the course at www.onpara.ca.
Ex-Toronto Blue Jays player Josh Donaldson has decided to retire. We wish Josh nothing but the best in his future retirement. I remember the days when he was around in the 2015-16 time frame, and he was a real integral part to the team. So congratulations on his announcement and his retirement. Wish him nothing but the best.
OnPara's year-end wheelchair basketball tournament is happening March 16th at Brock University, and we are looking for your help and volunteers. The tournament, which takes place between 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. on the 16th, is in need of volunteers, and you can get more information by reaching out to Tammy at onpara.ca.
Those are your headlines for this week, and if you want to get a hold of us on social, here's how you can go about doing that.
And welcome back to the Neutral Zone broadcast booth.
Play ball!
We're set to get this bowl game underway. The first pitch is brought to you by Brock Richardson's X account at Neutral Zone BR.
Strike!
Pitch and a strike. Hey, gang, why not strike up a chat with Claire Buchanan from the Neutral Zone? Find her on X at Neutral Zone CB. There's a swing of the chopper out to second base, right at Claire as she picks up the ball, throws it over to the first base for a routine play.
Out!
And fans, there's nothing routine about connecting with Cam and Josh from the Neutral Zone at Neutral Zone Cam J and at JWatson200. And the Neutral Zone is brought to you by the Ontario Para Network. Connect with them at ON Para Network. Follow them online at onpara.ca. Now that's a winning combination.
We are pleased to be joined by Executive Director of OnPara, Doug Hannum. Doug joins us now to discuss all things OnPara. Doug, welcome to the program. So nice to have you on board.
Right back at you, guys. I'm excited. I'm excited about our partnership together and working together. It's all good. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. Could you start off by telling us a bit about how you became involved with the Ontario Para Network?
So I've worked many years in sport now. I'm not going to say how many because then you might think I'm really old. But I've spent the better part of the last 15 years working in sport. I ran a national swimming organization for 7 years prior to COVID, and COVID killed us. Just killed us. So I was looking for work, and the opportunity became available. And you know what, guys? I'm kind of sorry I didn't do this sooner. So I have cerebral palsy. I have a very mild form. I'm completely mobile. I'm really, really active. But when I started the interview for the position, it was just like, wow, why, you know, it was a match made in heaven. So I think that was now almost 3 years ago now. Such a good fit, such an appreciation, of course, for what our players, our members go through. You know, again, I'm not in a wheelchair, but I certainly understand what it's like living with a disability, the challenges that we all face day to day. And, you know, as I think Claire's heard me say this before, I also really have an appreciation for the hunger that para-athletes have. I've said it before, I'll say it again, and I don't care if I ruffle feathers. As far as I'm concerned, para-athletes are the cream of the crop when it comes to drive, endurance. They know, like no other athlete, really. Unlike, you know, able-bodied athletes, I'm not suggesting for a moment that they don't work hard, but I know the para-athletes are all special because they've had so many hurdles they've had to go through just to be able to compete, just to be able to get on court or whatever the case may be. And that makes them that much more special. And, you know, my appreciation for them grows every day.
With the Ontario Para Network focusing primarily on para sports, can you give us a little bit more of a background about the organization and what it does?
So we have three sports that we're engaged with: wheelchair basketball, wheelchair rugby, and wheelchair tennis. We're the provincial body for all three sports. Our number one goal is high performance and populating the national teams with as many Ontario athletes as possible. That's our biggest priority because that's where we get our funding, a lot of our funding for. And, you know, we want our athletes to achieve at the highest level of sport. So I would say that high performance is probably one of our biggest priorities and getting those athletes to the podium. But we couldn't do any of that without our clubs. And like any provincial sport organization, the clubs are the lifeblood of what we do. The clubs are where those athletes come from. The clubs are normally involved in recruitment, and that's where everybody's career starts. And so club development, working together with our clubs, is also really important. And we do have a special program where really we do focus on athlete recruitment, and that's Bridging the Gap. And that's where we go into rehab centers and we tell the residents there the opportunities that are available in parasport. That is by far and away our biggest recruitment tool. It's interesting, the turnover rate or the rate at which we get athletes, it's very interesting. It's an average of 3 to 5 years. So what I'm saying there is when we go to rehab center, it can take anywhere from 3 to 5 years before an athlete gets involved in the sport and then gets to a level provincially where they're competing. But if you talk to a lot of our athletes, they'll tell you that that's how they started, that either they were in a rehab center and somebody came and spoke to them about the opportunities in parasport, or they went to one of our try it days, which of course is the other thing that we do, where we have an opportunity for athletes to try the sport. And those two are our biggest recruitment tools. And, you know, it's great that, you know, time frame, if you think that if somebody's in a rehab center, one of their biggest challenges is how am I going to deal with this now? My life has changed radically. And how am I going to live my life? And what we do is we let them know, hey, look, when you're ready, particularly if you were an athlete before, there's opportunity. It doesn't mean you can't be an athlete again. So that's, you know, those are important programs. We also have a school and community outreach program where we take our programs to schools to educate kids, which is another big part. But that's a pretty good overview of what we do, Claire. And
what are some of the goals or aspirations that you're hoping to accomplish with the organization?
It's a good question, Joshua. I struggled at first because, the organization, when I first got involved, it's interesting, and this is not a slight on the previous executive director, but I must have received 5, 6, 7 emails from different groups working on accessibility issues, disability issues, that kind of thing. So I realized really quickly that one of the things that she was highly involved in was that advocacy for disabled rights and that kind of thing. And trust me, you know, that's an important topic. But I felt like that's not who we are. We, you know, there's so many players in that area. So, so really for me and for the organization, it's about growth. It's about, attracting new and young athletes or any athletes, to expand our pool, but really making sure that para athletes know of the opportunities that exist. You know, I'm an alpine skier, and to this day, I still don't know how to get involved in para alpine. It's a complicated mesh of clubs and that kind of thing. And it really bothered me that I never had a chance to try and compete at a higher level at alpine skiing. And so I don't want anybody out there who's looking to get involved in para sport to not know what opportunities there are. So I think that's really important to us and to me personally as an organization is to give those opportunities to para athletes. And of course, I mean, I want to populate our national teams with as many Ontario athletes as possible. We're a dominant force in rugby. And I'd venture to say that were it not for Ontario, the sport would actually be in big trouble. If you look at the number of athletes on the national team, we were at nationals last year. We had three teams go to nationals and a two Division I team and one Division II team. The Division I teams both played in the final and the Division II team won the Division II. So that to me is something we're really proud of and we want to keep building on. So I want us to be a force on all of the national teams. That's a big goal for me and just continue to expand the opportunities for our athletes and our programs.
You touched on one of our bigger events that we've had over the last year or so. Is there any events coming up that you are excited for in any of the sports that we focus on, wheelchair rugby, wheelchair tennis, or wheelchair basketball?
Well, I'll start with basketball on two fronts. First of all, for the first time in a number of years, we are actually having the equivalent to provincial championships. That'll be later on this month. That's going to take place at Brock University. And I believe it's the 16th and 17th. There has always been that it's called, I think it's believed it's called the Great Lakes Championships. Don't quote me on that. But this year, more than ever, we're much more involved and we're really treating it as our provincial championships. So that's happening. We successfully bid and received, we're successful on bidding for and received the 2025 Women's National Championships. We have not hosted an event in Ontario in rugby or basketball in probably 6 or 7 years. So we're really excited about that opportunity. It's coming up in May of 2025. We're partnering with Sport Durham on that. It's all going to take place at the college. Four or five teams are coming from across the country, and it's a really big opportunity for us to promote wheelchair basketball, women's wheelchair basketball. And it just seems right that we're going to host that, and we're hoping to receive a successful bid on the 2026 Rugby Nationals. That would be great. So those are our kind of our events that are on the calendar, at least right now.
Now, recently, as we like to promote here on our program, the two organizations, our show and yourselves, have started a partnership. I'm wondering, why did you think that our show was the right fit for you to partner with?
Look, you guys have a great track record. I know through working with Claire that you've been doing this for some time now. I love your approach to the topics and the quality of the work that you've been doing over the years. And we've been looking for, you know, I said almost from the day that I started that I felt like we needed to do a podcast. I felt like we needed to be out there as an additional voice for para sport. And the timing worked out pretty well that you guys were looking for a new partner. We were looking for an opportunity to work with a group like you We're off to a rip-roaring start, in my opinion. It's great. You know, I know you guys don't and shouldn't exclusively focus on para, but I know it's a big part of what you do, and we're really excited and proud to be partnered with you on this. We really like the work that you've done and the reputation that you have, which is very strong. So it's nothing but a win-win for us. Like I say, we've only just begun, so we're really happy and excited about it.
You know, it's music to my ears, and as you said earlier, I don't really care who I upset at this point, is because it just is music to my ears when you say things like, you know, we focus on para sports, but we shouldn't focus on it exclusively. We have been banging the drum for a long time that para athletes don't just want to talk about para sports. They want to talk about, you know, wherever your loyalty is, you know, they want to talk about their sports teams. And we enjoy getting into arguments and discussions that are heated. And so for me, this is total music to my ears. And as the producer of this program, which has literally shaped this, you know, from basically bottom to the top, it's such a wonderful, wonderful partnership we have with you, and such a early start, and lots of, you know, time to go, of course, but we're really, really happy to be a part of what we're doing here.
That's great. No, you've done it. You guys have done a great job. Congratulations, you know, on the previous work that you've done. That was the other thing that excited me. You're not, we might as well use the sports vernacular, you're not a bunch of rookies here. Right. So to be able to partner with an experienced group such as yourselves is a treat. And, you know, there's no growing pains here. You guys have just jumped right in and hopefully not skipped a beat. So.
Doug, I'm really curious on your one topic about wheelchair rugby. You said that program has really thrived with Ontario athletes being a part of it. Why do you think that program has just jumped in and just gone through versus the other ones, which maybe, if I can say, have some room to grow in that department? Can you shed some light there?
Yeah, and Brock, let's be honest, wheelchair basketball right now, we're not sure that either team is going to qualify for the Paralympics. In fact, we're not sure. We're not sure. And we know that the program is struggling. We're focused on trying to get as many young athletes into the program because there's just not that base. If you look at the national team, there's some players that have been there for a long time. They've been fantastic for the program. They've done Canada a great service, but they're not the future. And so, you know, I won't hide that, Brock, that definitely basketball has lots of work to do. I think I have to give full credit to really, you know, as you guys probably know, first of all, rugby started here in this province. And a guy like Dave Wilsey, who's still involved and is a legend in the sport. And that London area is still the hub for wheelchair rugby. And, you know, I've been out there a couple of times, watched them in action, and the way that they interact and the way they bring on new players, somebody who it's their first opportunity, and just watch the experienced athletes and how they take them under their wing and really get them excited in the sport. And so I got to give them 100% credit. And so in that area, I think it was 7 or 9 new participants this year, which is an absolutely unheard of number in para sport. We get excited if we get 2 new athletes in a year. So I got to give credit to London and the crew out there. They're just, they really are great at recruitment. But as I say, what's really special about it is they know what it's like to get started in the sport, and they really support new athletes coming on board. They're not thrown to the wolves. And, you know, if you've seen wheelchair rugby, I always say it's not for the faint of heart. And, you know, they're fearless. They love the contact. It's crazy. And for somebody new, you can just imagine what that's like coming into a gym and seeing these wheelchairs crashing against each other. It's a little intimidating, but they manage to work with those new athletes to gently integrate them into the sport. So I wish I could say we had a lot to do with it, but I got to be honest, it's really at the club level. And, you know, our job is to do everything to support them. Fortunately, we had some additional chairs that we gave to London. Wheelchair Rugby Canada has also got some funding where we're going to come up with some new chairs, because, again, you guys probably know chairs are a massive expense. And so that's the biggest barrier for anybody getting involved, particularly in rugby. You know, the basketball chairs aren't cheap either, but the rugby ones, they're a pretty penny. So I think between having the equipment and having that atmosphere there in London has really made the difference. And yeah, like I say, I don't hesitate to say that we're a force. You know, Wheelchair Rugby Canada should be on our hands and knees thanking us for, because we're the heart and soul of the program. So, which is why we're so anxious that they qualify for the Paralympics and do well. And I think there's a good chance. And if that happens, that's a big win for us too.
Yeah, you talked about the foundation of sport needing to be strong consistently, and wheelchair rugby has definitely shown that in our province. And I want you to touch on the initiative that Wheelchair Rugby Canada has right now to bring in new players, specifically through the interaction of rehab centers and athletes going out there and connecting. And then just finish off with how people can get involved, not just with wheelchair rugby, but in all of our sports through the Ontario Para Network.
Sure, Claire. Thanks. So Wheelchair Rugby Canada received a sizable grant, Community Sport for All, from the feds. A big chunk of that money is going into the production of a promotional video on wheelchair rugby, which we're really excited to see. That's really going to, we think, help in terms of recruitment. But then the other big piece of the puzzle is, they've downloaded money and opportunity to the provinces, focusing, you know, I spoke earlier about the rehab centers. So they've provided us with funding for peer-to-peer coaches to go into the rehab centers and do that athlete recruitment. And so that's a big piece of it. They've also provided some money for chairs, which is huge, as I mentioned before. So we're really excited about that. The federal money is always comes not with strings attached, but it has to be spent really quickly because it has to fall within a certain period of time. But it's a nice problem to have. But yeah, promotional video, support for the peer-to-peer program, and chairs are the biggest parts of that program. So we're happy to be a part of it, and it's already underway. We've got two facilitators, and we had somebody in a center today. So I should tell you too, guys, and maybe you already know this, is the rehab centers love it when we go in. It's not a tough sell. They love it. They love the energy that our ambassadors bring, that the athletes bring. And, you know, it kind of lights up the room when we're there. Because, you know, a whole world has just opened up to these individuals that maybe that I'm sure they didn't know existed before. And how to get involved? Well, sure. I mean, we're all over social media. I think we're on every social media there is. So Instagram, Facebook. So just if you go to our website, which is onpara.ca, you'll see the link to social media. But if you go to the website, you can also see our clubs, and where you can see how to reach out to them directly, or you can contact any of our wonderful staff who can help facilitate anybody wanting to get involved. Yeah, absolutely.
Doug, thank you so much for taking the time to do this. I think I'll let a little secret out of the bag. We record this podcast off business hours. So we appreciate you taking the time to do this. Appreciate the partnership. And we'll continue to bang the drum for Ampera because we're supportive, obviously. And yeah, so thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
You, great job, guys. Pleasure to work with you. Enjoyed this very much. And thank you for the continued support. Appreciate it.
That was Doug Hanneman, and he is the executive director of On Para. And I always get his name a little bit wrong. It's Doug Hanneman, ladies and gentlemen. And
I make all worse.
We'll be back in just a bit with more content.
The Neutral Zone is brought to you by the Ontario Para Network. Connect with them at ON Para Network. Follow them online at onpara.ca.
As we roll on today's podcast, I have to tell you that it was one heck of a journey to get the executive director, Doug Hanneman, on the podcast. I wanted him on within the first couple of episodes that we did because I wanted him to be the voice of On Para, and we finally were able to accomplish that. And one thing that I want to highlight from the interview of a few things is I was sitting there thinking, when you're running a disability-focused organization, it really helps when the person in charge is a person who lives with a disability. I think that is a huge benefactor to the situation because, as he mentioned in the interview, he understands it. He lives it. He understands. Even if it's he doesn't have as physical of a disability, he still lives it on some way, shape, or form. Josh, I'll let you weigh in on this first.
Yeah, I think it makes a huge difference because they know the barriers that are in place. They know how difficult it is, as he said, to find a way to participate in para-alpine. Like, he loves to ski. He can't find a way to ski. That's a problem. When you have that knowledge, it just makes you that much better able to contribute and to work towards solution more than anything else. There's nothing to say that a person without a disability can't do that. They're more than capable. It's just they don't know what they don't know. When you're a person living with a disability, you're much better able to understand what the landscape is like, what's going on, and the challenges that are being faced.
Absolutely. There's nothing better than filtering knowledge from lived experience. And that's what Doug brings, is exactly that. He's someone living with a disability that is now working to grow parasports. And it's important. You can't in any aspect, outside or within sports or the disabled community, grow things to their potential without having that lived experience behind it.
Claire, you work directly with On Para, and I mean, I don't want to put you on the spot here because it is your place of employment, but I'm going to. You're right. What is it like working with the organization? Can you shed some light on that? And maybe for the audience that has no idea, tell us what you do at On Para.
Absolutely. So I work directly with wheelchair rugby and wheelchair tennis. And so I work not only with growing the provincial part of both those sports, but like Doug said, it's all about always bringing in new people and sharing the sport with the communities around you and making sure that not only the disabled community, because we do have sports that the able-bodied community can get involved with as well, that it's there, it's accessible, it's available, and in some aspects, anyone can play. Wheelchair rugby does have its own kind of uniqueness to that, where it is very much linked to having a quad disability. But you know what? When I found this job, I was pushing right at almost 2 years of being unemployed because of the pandemic. And I've always put myself in working situations within the sport world. I definitely believe that you should enjoy what you're doing for work. And I love being in the sports atmosphere. So before this job, I was working at the Ford Performance Center, the hockey arena. And of course, I loved that as a hockey player myself. And so to find this position where I can directly help parasport athletes in the same way that, or the same organization helped me as a wheelchair basketball athlete for some time, just find the love of sports, no matter if it's one sport, multiple sports. We are a big advocate for multi-sport athletes. We are constantly wanting our tennis athletes to try wheelchair basketball and vice versa. And so it's just, I feel very lucky that I get to wake up and go into a job that I love and that I feel a lot of value in. And it's fantastic. The staff, to the athletes, to the whole community. It's just, yeah, it's fantastic. And Doug himself, he's just not only a great boss, but as you probably felt in the interview, just a good guy that has the right goals in mind for what he's doing.
Yeah, I would agree 100%. That was the first visual interaction, because again, for the audience, we do have a visual component, at least for us on the program, to be able to see each other in case somebody, you know, has something really pressing to say. It's nice to physically see each other. You guys don't see that, but we see each other, and there's some value in that. But yeah, just to physically, you know, meet Doug through the computer was something that I feel was important. Look, we can sit here and say, you know, we're going to support Ampera, but it's nice to put a name to the face. It's nice to put a name behind the organization, and someone that now, when I know who I'm emailing, and this goes for our guests, this goes for any situation we do. So it was really, really great having Doug on the program, and we're going to, obviously, as our focus needs to be and should be, it should be Ontario athletes, because that's our sponsorship. That's what butters our bread in this situation, and we're going to do that. But we also don't want to lose sight of the fact that there are other athletes beyond that that also deserve being highlighted and things like that. So it's an all-encompassing, and I'm not sure if I said this on the podcast or if I said it offline for a bit, but music to my ears when Doug said about, you know, we shouldn't just focus on parasports, because people in the disability community really like mainstream sports. We like to throw things at our TV, yelling at Hairboy. If you know Josh's story about his father calling Bo Bichette Hairboy because his flowing locks, and those are the things we love. But our primary focus has to be parasports, because that's what named us the number one podcast, not only in one spot, but in two. So we've got to keep to that, and we've got to keep to our promise to the audience, to the sponsor, to everything involved like that. Proceeding away from Ampera for a bit, we had Sean Lucas on the program with us last week, and he is the defensive coach for the Canadian Women's Para Ice Hockey Program. And one of the things that came out of this conversation was that he feels that he's around the most dedicated group of athletes he's ever been around. And this led me to think, I think this goes for the whole parasport community. I understand I'm biased. I get all that. I can recognize that. But I really believe that you are among the most dedicated people. When I say that, start with you, Claire, and then move straight over to Josh. When I say that, where do you think I am on this? Do you think I'm right up there, or do you think I'm a bit off here?
Oh, no, I think it's a bullseye. I think that when we discuss how hard para athletes work compared to their able-bodied athletes and peers, we tend to have a narrow focus of like on court, in the gym, that kind of stuff. But I think that where the extra work comes is outside of the sport and having to push for exposure and push for support and push for that equal level ground outside of the training facilities. I think that para athletes have to work on that a whole lot more because one, they're not getting the same funding. And it's huge that yes, in 2024 at Paris, Canadian para athletes are now going to get prize money for medals. Like this should have happened well ago. And it's something that para athletes, one, shouldn't have to think about. Able-bodied athletes don't have to think about that when they're training. They don't have to go home and say, hey, where is my next paycheck going? Because it might not be able to go to training because we have to put it towards other expenses. And I think that's where we need to kind of widen our lens is that, yes, we have this comparison of para sport athletes work harder. And I think it's in a whole lot more, it touches on a whole lot more dynamics than just we're training harder in the gym or we're on the court more. It's definitely way more than that.
Absolutely. I agree. For me, what it comes down to is both para athletes and able-bodied athletes, we both have to train hard for our sport and we both have to learn the skills and all that. That is all the same. Where the difference comes in with a para sport athlete is you have to look at your training and your mechanics of your sport and say, how do I adapt this to my disability? Because as much as all three of us will sit there and say to our to those around us, I'm just as able as you are, it's not really the case, unfortunately. And so we not only have to think about, okay, I have to get to this ice time at this arena and do this and eat that and da 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 da. When I go to that arena, am I going to be able to get in the door? Am I going to be able to get in the change room so that I can put my gear on to go practice? These are things that a traditional athlete, an able-bodied athlete, does not have to think about at all. I can remember our para hockey team a few years ago going up to Millbrook to play a game. And there was about 20 of us on the team. And Millbrook is a tiny community. I swear they opened and closed the arena for the time we were there. I didn't see anything else going on. And I just remember we almost had to change in shifts because there just was not room in these tiny little change rooms for all of us to change. And so you end up going in and like, go, 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 go. Get yourself dressed. We got to get the rest of the team in. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go. And you're just sitting there and you're like, I bet an able-bodied team doesn't have this problem. They might be crammed in here like sardines, but they'd all fit. And we just didn't. And so there's more to consider for the para athlete. And even injuries might take longer to heal, or, you know, there might be specialized equipment that has to be purchased, as Doug was saying with the wheelchair rugby team. Those wheelchairs are built like tanks, absolute tanks. And that's not cheap. That metal has to come from somewhere and it has to be paid for. And so to have a group like Ompara there to help an athlete with that part of things is helpful, let alone all the other things we have to consider.
Yeah, it is. And it's things that I would say to your point, Josh, that are almost taken for granted because you think, oh, we have this spot here at this arena. Nobody stops and thinks, even if they're well-intended, nobody stops and thinks, oh, but how does Josh and his team get in here? Until we're in the moment, Claire, and we realize, ooh, we're stuck here. Have you been in a situation like this in your career in any kind?
Absolutely. And showing up
to on the same team.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't thankfully happen too much at the national team level. I think there's just a lot more networking done at that level in terms of accessibility and also experience. You back off of teams and piggyback off of teams that kind of have done it before, and you go to the same arenas and you use the same stuff mm-hmm. because you know where that access is coming from. But showing up to an arena or change rooms seem to be the one of the biggest barriers for team sports is it's got to be able to fit a handful of wheelchairs in. The doors have to be wide enough for those chairs to access the space. And I think one of the most frustrating things, this has got to be frustrating for wheelchair users, is that there's accessible stuff within the arena, but there isn't a button to open the door on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
It boggles my mind that mm-hmm. yep. that this happens. And I don't want to go back to this comes from lived experience. Who's planning these arenas and the construction, and who's going through that process of making sure that this place is accessible? And are they including any disabled voices?
Well, and here's the thing. Imagine having a door on, for example, the washroom door, but then you get inside and none of the stalls are accessible. Like, good try, guys, but you missed a step.
Yes. This is completely out of like my athlete life, but just me living downtown Toronto. There's plenty of places that have accessible entryways, and I'm doing air quotes while I say this. You can get into the mm-hmm. place, but you can't pee there. It is down a flight of stairs. You can get into the place, but I hope you're not staying long because you can't access our washrooms.
Right.
And it's one of the most frustrating things because it's so prevalent. I got to tell you, there's just more often than not, I go to places and that's the situation.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I remember, again, going off the sports trail for just a second. I remember there was a Blockbuster that I used to frequent. There's a throwback for people. Blockbuster. And I would go in, there'd be a button on the outside. The door would open. Then there'd be a little cove, I guess, like a foyer. And then there's another door. But door number two does not have a button. So
brilliant.
Here I am sitting between door one and two. And yet I'm sitting there with my nose pressed up going, somebody help me? Somebody help me? And those are the things and those are the moments where you can really get defeated as a disabled individual, as a disabled athlete. I don't care what you want to label this as. I don't care. You can be defeated and it really sucks and it's unfortunate. And it's a challenge. Like, and that's not the only example I could give, but it's the one that stands out to me at the moment. And it's that moment where you're like, all I want to do is play sports, and yet still you got to throw in my face that I'm disabled because I can't access something.
I can remember our team going up to Peterborough to play the Kawartha team a couple of years ago, and we were playing at the Memorial Center where Peterborough Petes play. Beautiful, historic arena. Lovely. On the visitor's side of the ice, you have to go up three or four stairs to get to the ice surface. We ended up as a team going halfway around the building in order to get onto the ice to play our game against another para hockey team. Nothing wrong with the intention of the people we were allowed to play there, but how are we going to get on the ice?
Absolutely. And like, as an athlete, like you said, you go into places like that and you like the history of it. Like, cool, the Peter O'Peets play here. And like, there's just so much history. And but it's an old barn. It's so old. Oh, yes. It's so inaccessible. Yeah, it's that fine line of like, yeah, you want to keep like the history and integrity of the facility. But come on, like, add a ramp. Add a button. Something.
Because that nostalgic of the building goes out real quick when you're like, oh, this is great, but I can't access
it. It's like the game. You lose the ice or any of that.
My favorite one is when you call a place, and again, I'm not talking about a sports venue necessarily, but when you call a place and they say, oh, we only have one step.
It's that, like, makes you not
accept my $800 wheelchair isn't making it up a step. I'm sorry, buddy.
We have not mastered the art of hovering yet.
We're going to be the coolest people in town when we do, though.
We're trying.
There you go.
Yeah. I want to move on to something that just kind of dawned on me, and it's because of our colleague Cameron Jenkins it dawned on me, and that is that the World Curling Championships are upon us. And I want to talk about the team a little bit because they are a team that is loaded with experience. Mark Idison, who is the skip, and he throws the lead stones. John Thurston, Ina Forrest, and their newest member is Gilbert Dash. And they are off to a pretty decent start. I just want to run down some of their scores. They started out with a 9-6 victory over Korea. Then they had another victory, 6-4 over Slovakia. Had another victory, 8-3 over Italy. Then they hit a blip and they played China, who's the defending Paralympic champions. And they lost 6-4. And then they bounced back against Estonia, 7-5. So they're off to a decent start. And they've won a medal at every Paralympic Games since the sport was adopted into the Games in 2006. Any quick thoughts from either of you over anything that I outlined or just the sport of wheelchair curling in general? Josh, start with you and then go straight over to Claire.
I'm amazed at the dominance that they've shown so far. I mean, to win a medal at every Paralympics that you've been to, that takes a lot of talent and a lot of skill. And to be able to cycle people in and out of that team, as I'm sure they have over the years, that's an incredible accomplishment. And they look like they're well on their way to winning another medal at this event. Like, this is astounding. I wish, and maybe they are somewhere, but I wish this was getting more exposure. I wish this was on TV somewhere. Because if I tell most of my able-bodied friends that there's wheelchair curling, well, in the case of my friends, the first question might be, what's curling? But, you know, that's something completely different. But when you tell them there's wheelchair curling, well, how do you do that?
Yeah, and that's the sparkle of parasport, right? You bring in new people by saying, hey, there's this sport, but come check out the disabled version of it. People seeing para hockey for the first time, they think it's going to be this like butterflies and rainbows, no contact hockey, just quote unquote soft. You know what I mean? And they come in and they see people just going at it. It's a full contact sport, just as much contact as you see in the NHL. I would say absolutely. And yeah, I mean, this curling team, I did not know that they've had that consistent streak at the Paralympic Games like that. And that's kind of the dream, right? For NSO and a program
dominating
in any
sport.
That's the dream right there, is consistently showing up at games and meddling. That's incredible for them. And Their 6-4 loss to the reigning champs, I'd say that's a pretty close game, and they're right in it. And I mean, we just had the Scotties, and there's another, I think the Breyer is on right now. Yes. Why isn't this curling tournament on at the same time?
I'm so proud.
You know what I mean? This is a great opportunity to put them all on the same network and have them going.
I just want to say before we move into the Breyer a little bit, I just want to say for people, and this is no way, shape, form, a slight against wheelchair curling or anything like that, but they are winning medals against like 10 teams when they go to events. This is not one of those, okay, there's four teams at the event and they got third place and yeah, this is wonderful, which would still be wonderful, by the way, because a Paralympic medal is a Paralympic medal. This is a literal deep field that exists in wheelchair curling, and they've literally had maybe one or two changes in their sort of second, third position over the last little while. It has remained the same consistently, and I think that speaks to, if you keep the team together consistently, you're going to get results, and that's just the way that I look at it, the way I view it, and it's something for sure. It really is. So we wish them nothing but the best, and I haven't found it to be able to be live streamed. I went onto the website. There's live game tracking, but it's not something that I can, you know, get to right away, unless I'm missing something, but I can't seem to access it. And this is another one of those moments where it's like, man, you're disrespecting such a great sport. If this was wheelchair rugby, wheelchair basketball, we know that we would be able to find it, because that's the sport that draws everybody in, whether able-bodied community or not. And if you put it on, that able-bodied community will drive to the place, and it really is a matter of just driving it there and being there for it a little bit. So, yeah, I wish them nothing but the best, but I just wanted to mention that these are deep fields that they play against every single year. Speaking of deep field, let's talk a little bit about the Breyer in Saskatchewan. That is another deep field. Right now we have some undefeated teams. We have Mike McEwen, who's representing Saskatchewan, Aaron Sisnitsky, Team Canada, Brad Gushue is stumbling a tad. They're 2-2 right at the moment, still kind of within the playoffs a little bit here, long week to go. If we look at the other pool, we know that Alberta's Brendan Botcher is still undefeated. We know that Aaron Benoit is still hanging around from Northern Ontario. There's lots of deep fields here. Brad Jacobs, Reed Carruthers is an undefeated team. It's just a real, real deep field. Josh, I know you've been watching bits and pieces of this. Your thoughts on this as we record a couple of days into the event?
I think the thing that strikes me initially is just how, once again, we're seeing a Team Canada team struggle. Because I watched a game, I think it was earlier this morning, Team Canada versus...
Newfoundland, I believe.
Possibly.
Was it Newfoundland? I can't entirely remember, but yeah, it was.
Right. Or was it maybe it was Northwest Territories. I feel like it was Northwest Territories, actually. And
yeah, because it was one of the Cooey brothers,
yes,
I believe.
It was Northwest Territories, yeah. Now that I think about it.
Yeah.
Glad you jogged my memory there. But they won the game 7-6. And it's the first time the Northwest Territories has beaten Team Canada at the Breyer. And it makes you wonder, like, during the Scotties, we had Kerry Einerson's team stumble and ultimately not make it into the final in order to retain their crown.
Defend the title?
Yes, thank you. And now I can't help but wonder if we're going to see the same thing here. And if you had said to me before the Breyer started that Brad Gushue was going to struggle, I'd have laughed at you, because he and his team have been dominant for so long, just like the Einarsson rink on the women's side. And yet here we are. And I think it just speaks to the depth of the teams now that they've moved to this ranking system, as opposed to just the provincial champions as they have in the past. I've really enjoyed it. There's been a lot of really exciting curling, and I'm looking forward to the rest of the week. And I kind of hope my day job is slow so I can watch some of it.
Claire, for you, I just have the question of exactly what Josh just alluded to. Can there be more pressure because you're wearing that Team Canada jacket? Because Josh, you literally took the words right out of my mouth. Like, for the second straight event, that's fine. It's totally cool. But for the second straight event, we've seen Team Canada struggle. And I don't think it's, oh, just ho-hum, it happens. Like, you're talking about two teams that know what they're doing. So, Claire, is the pressure something that you believe is a real, true thing?
Yeah, I mean, when you're wearing the Team Canada jersey or jacket or shirt, there's always that pressure. You have a standard to kind of uphold. But it really, I don't think that that's such a factor when you get into veterans like what we're talking about. I think that they've gotten to a place where you've done the work to make sure the pressure isn't a factor. I think that the gap just keeps closing in the sport. There's just better teams and better athletes coming up. And unfortunately, an athletic career doesn't go on forever as well. At some point, you either go out on top and you finish with a cherry on top and you retire at the top of your game, or the other happens and you see a bit of a dip, whether it's a little bit of a dip or kind of a landslide.
Maybe a fall off a cliff.
Yeah. You either go out on top or you experience a bit of a downfall. And maybe that's what's happening on both ends, both in the women's game and the men's game, is that it's just their time. You know what I mean? Or you never know how long an athlete has left kind of in the tank. And is this a question of how much time does he have left in his career? I know Brad Gushue, the name itself is a big one in the sport. I'm still getting pretty acclimated to the names and the sport and stuff. But to ask you guys, is this kind of a sign of the end is near?
I think so. I just think it speaks to your point of the fact that the gap is closing. I think Brad has been at the top of the mountain. I would be surprised if he's not in the playoff picture. He's got to finish in the top three. And I look and say, okay, is there any other team in that pool where you would say that's going to beat him out of the top three? I would say no, but also due to the fact that you played four games and you're at a 500 record and you got to play a total of eight, and you basically have to run the table through that remaining four, that's tough. That's sort of tough for me to think. I mean, we did see Caitlin Laws got in on a 500 record when Scotties round robin was over. Sure, that's possible in the men's here, but I think if you're Brad, you're looking at this going, man, I cannot lose another game. And it starts tonight with, as we record this, it starts tonight with one of the Cooey brothers, Kevin Cooey. He has to beat Kevin Cooey to stay among the top here to be able to do that. So yeah, I mean, I do think that the gap is closing and the thought process is there. Josh, what do you think?
Well, Kevin Kui is a great example. He's the Alberta, one of the Alberta representatives, because there are multiple in this tournament. But he's currently sitting in seventh place as of some very updated stats that I just saw from Devin Haru, with a 1-3 record. That is something that shocks me. I would say if Brad Gushue and his Team Canada rank don't beat Kevin Kui tonight, there's something seriously wrong, because it doesn't look like, based on the record, that Kevin is having a very good tournament either. Right now, your top three, as I see it, are Saskatchewan, Northwest Territories, which is Kevin Kui's brother Jamie, and the rink out of PEI, which is rather shocking. On the other side, you've got Carruthers, you've got Northern Ontario with Bonneau, and you've got, as you said, Brendan Bosher. So those are names even that I wouldn't have put at the top of the heap necessarily. So I just think it really is a sign of the times, and a sign that curling is just getting better and better and better.
Guys, I want to finish a little bit on a lighter note here, and also to tease the audience a little bit and tease you guys, because you won't hear them until we put them on the podcast. But I was at the Canadian Paralympic Committee Summit, and I got the opportunity to interview 8 athletes, and they're going to be rolled out over the next number of months. Our schedule for the Neutral Zone just is like literally jam-packed, and it's just guest after guest, and we're such in a position now where people are coming on and wanting to be a part of our podcast, and it's really an honor for me to do this. And so we will be rolling out these interviews as time goes on and as we get closer to the Paralympic Games. But I wanted to tease you guys and tease the audience a bit, because I sat down with Arlie Rivard, who is a Paralympic swimmer, and she's won 10 medals. And one of the questions I asked her was, do you feel that, you know, people should get back pay from the medals? And she said, well, yeah, but I know it's not going to happen. And so it's really not a conversation to have. And then she brought up very haphazardly, she said, and I know how much money I would win. You don't have to tell me. I get it 100%. I understand it. I live it. I get it 100%. It was just so fun to sit down with her and just discuss this, because she's like, I know I've been successful, but there's no point in walking back and saying, what could I have done? What should I have done? Because I'm not having the conversation. Can you really go to the philanthropist and say, give us more money? No, you can't. And I see both of you nodding and shaking your head. So I don't know where to go first. I'm looking at Josh. Josh, go, and then straight into Claire, and then we'll end the show. Your thoughts on just what I said?
And I think Gorley's absolutely right. She would almost literally have to have a truck backed up to her door with the amount she could have won based on all the medals she's won in the pool for Canada. She has been dominant in her sport. But I also agree with her that there's no point in looking backwards, because if you go to the philanthropist who's offered this money up for these athletes and you say you want more, you run the risk of looking ungrateful. And as we've talked on this program, this beginning is just that. It's the beginning. But we can't run the risk of going back now. And so at the risk of seeming like a teetotaler or just a wishy-washy person, I don't see a way where you can go back to corporations or philanthropy and say, we need more. Once the program gets going, then yes, I think you can. But I don't ever see a situation where you can say to someone, we need to compensate these athletes from the past. It's just not practical, unfortunately.
Absolutely. And you can say, I wish I had that, and I wish we had these resources, and I wish. Or you can be grateful for where we are right now. And I can use the example of the women's para hockey team. I can say that I wish I didn't have to put thousands of dollars into representing Canada and being able to play the sport. But I am so grateful that every female player that comes through that program moving forward will never have to worry about that again. I wish that we could go back and have things covered like we do now and be in the position where we are now, three, four, five years ago. But that's not how it went. That's not how it went. We can't change it. We can't dwell. But we can be really grateful for where we're at right now. And this just sets a precedent of how para athletes at the Olympics are going to be rewarded and shown for their success moving forward. And I just hope that it just continues and it grows and these athletes get the prize money that they deserve.
I will end by saying this, and I've lived by this motto for a very long time. Do not bite the hand that feeds you. Because if you bite the hand that feeds you, you could be asking for more trouble. 3-4 months ago, didn't know where this podcast was going to be. Didn't know what was going to happen. And then Ontario Para comes along and says, we'll take it. And we will expect that you, and not under a pressure point of view, but we will expect that you thrive. And that's what I believe. So be very, very careful that you do not bite the hand that feeds you, and be grateful for what you have. That is the end of our program for this week. I would like to thank Josh Watson, Claire Buchanan. I'd also like to thank our wonderful technical producer, Mark Aflalo. Stay tuned for next week, because you just never know what happens when you enter the neutral zone. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you next time. Be safe, be well.
The Neutral Zone is brought to you by the Ontario Para Network. Connect with them at ON Para Network. Follow them online at onpara.ca. Now that's a winning combination.